Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 Wednesday afternoon, March 12th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The approach of St. Patrick's Day means corned beef sales are at their peak. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the latest reading on inflation is out as President Trump's tariffs trigger retaliation from America's partners. We're joined by Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services, based in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us today. And then let's start off by talking about the Consumer Price Index report for February. The rate of inflation on a year-over-year basis, 2.8%. That was below analysts' expectations. That was closer to the 2% target. And what were some of the factors driving this deceleration in the most in this most recent CPI print?
It was fairly broad-based. So we saw a small increase in energy prices. We saw a small increase in other types of goods. We saw a slower increase in services, including housing. So pretty broad-based across the consumer basket, slowing in price growth.
Now, is this sustainable going forward? Because this follows several months of CPI numbers that were above 3% and rather frustrating.
Well, I think the big concern is how do tariffs impact the inflation outlook. So I think given the momentum in the economy, we would expect to be seeing slower inflation going forward. But I think we are going to see some businesses raising their prices, either prices of imports or, U.S. Producers who see less competition from abroad, and that will allow them to increase their prices. So I think that this slowing in inflation is only temporary.
Now let's talk about the trade war that's not only taking place between the U.S. and its neighbors, Mexico and Canada, but now we're talking about retaliatory tariffs from the EU and from China. And how is that going to show up in the economy, especially when it looks like these tariffs are being used more or less as a negotiation tactic? They're implemented and then pulled away at the last minute, or maybe pulled away within hours of being implemented.
That's right. I think that if they are implemented only temporarily, then the impact on inflation is going to be modest. I think the implications for employment in the near term are going to be modest. The concern is that if this back and forth persists and goes on for months and months, businesses are going to be less likely to invest because they don't know what the tariff outlook is going to be from day to day, and that makes their decisions much more difficult. So I think it's also going to cause consumers to hold off on purchases because they don't know if things are going to be more expensive or less expensive going forward. So I think all of this uncertainty, over a period of weeks and months, is going to be a drag on economic economic growth.
Now, we're still a far cry from the 9% CPI numbers that were showing up 3 years ago in the summer of 2022. But has anyone really gamed out yet these tariffs, either through economic confusion or a lack of capital expenditure spending, or actually passing along elevated tariffs to consumers, how this is going to show up in CPI reports going forward?
Yeah, I think what we're likely to see is not that we're going to see a big resurgence in inflation, but that inflation is going to be stuck above the Fed's 2% objective in the near term. You know, it's going to be businesses are going to have the incentive to raise prices with higher tariffs, and so that means that we will see prices going up a little more quickly than they otherwise would have. In terms of the impact on growth, the longer the tariffs last, the more they're a negative on growth, and the more they're a negative on job growth as well.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, fans of corned beef are salivating as St. Patrick's Day looms.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
St. Patrick's Day, officially Monday, but parties celebrating the occasion will be taking place all weekend long. That means corned beef, cabbage, and maybe a beer or two. Let's discuss the meaty part of that list with Mark Goodman. He is the owner and CEO of Schmaltz Deli, 3011 Ogden in West Suburban Lyle. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And this has got to be this is your prime time for corned beef, I would imagine. And how many briskets do you go through by the time the calendar turns over to March 18th?
Conservatively, between our smoked corned beef and our regular corned beef, probably about 300.
And what is it in the Jewish delicatessen tradition? Why is it, you know, corned beef, pastrami, smoked meat, if you find yourself north of the border in Canada? How did that tradition come to pass?
It really came to pass from the Eastern Europeans and all the immigration. It was definitely a way to preserve meat, and it became a big part of the life of Jewish delis and many other delis, too, Italian delis and number. All across the immigration period of the 30s and 40s, and still continues today.
Now, when you talk about just the amount of corned beef that you will be selling between now and St. Patrick's Day, when you get the brisket, is it pre-treated, or do you have your own process to turn it into corned beef?
Well, we have partners that help us. We have vendors that we've selected that brine and cook the corned beef to our specifications, as well as package it for us. So we are really, because of the volume and the size of our store, we have that part done for us, but it's to our recipe.
Now, is St. Patrick's Day one of the biggest days on your calendar?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is. This is the biggest week of the year, and St. Patrick's Day is the biggest day of the year. There's no question. And we also only have our smoked corned beef once a year, and we started that yesterday, and we'll have that through the 17th. And that's a specialty item all in itself. Our biggest sandwiches are number 14, which are our Reuben Sloppy Paul. And we put a smoky version of it out there this week.
We're talking corned beef with Mark Goodman, owner and CEO of Schmaltz Deli, 3011 Ogden Avenue in West Suburban Lyle. I mentioned this just before the segment began. I went to the grocery store on the weekend because we are hosting people for St. Patrick's Day on Sunday, and picked up four corned beef briskets. They were on sale. And if someone is serving corned beef at their St. Patrick's Day party, I think the temptation is to just, you know, drown it in Guinness and let it sit in the slow cooker. What do you recommend if someone wants to really level up their corned beef game, if they are hosting people for the South Side Parade or the Northwest Side Parade?
Well, if you can smoke it and have the time, that's obviously one of the best ways to do it. The brine is what really matters, and the cure period, and then just cooking it slow. That's really the key. It's also what you accompany it with. You know, we have a full meal that goes with braised cabbage, caraway cabbage, along with fingerling potatoes and carrots and horseradish gravy, and we have Culcannon, which is an Irish mashed potato. So it really, to complete the meal, Guinness helps, but you got to have all those other things too.
And then what happens on March 18th with all of, if there is unsold corned beef, does it just go into sandwiches or does it become hash at breakfast time?
No, our corned beef goes all year long. That's our biggest seller. The smoked corned beef, if we have any left at all, we have another sandwich called the Smoky Mountain, which will be a feature sandwich next month. And if there's any left, it'll all go then.
Mark Goodman, owner and CEO of Schmaltz Deli, 3011 Ogden Avenue in Lisle. Thank you for joining us today. We'll let you get back to slinging that corned beef because this is your busy season. Coming up next, why you may want to avoid third-party delivery apps. We'll talk about that next.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Third-party delivery apps offer restaurants opportunities to reach new customers, but there are some things you should know about how they operate. Let's take a closer look with Brian Tondrick, who is the founder and owner of Bartoli's Pizzeria in Roscoe Village and in Chicago's Westtown neighborhood. Brian, thank you for joining us today. And I think this is a very interesting time to have this discussion because 5 years ago tomorrow, I was at City Hall with a number of leaders in the restaurant industry as the COVID shutdowns were starting, and there were representatives of third-party delivery apps talking about how they were going to help restaurants that did not have takeout or delivery capability build those things out so they could stay in business while everybody had to stay home. And how has that particular space evolved since then, especially for restaurants that may rely on them?
Hey, Rob, thanks for having me on. I think it's definitely it's important for your viewers to know that, you know, these third party apps are, well, they're great to help find new businesses and new restaurants for them, to try to find, try them for the first time. But at the end of the day, they're charging us huge fees, sometimes as much as 30% of the order when you place that order. So it really just, it kills your profitability. And there's a lot of other things that they're doing too. Like restricting your access to customer data. For instance, if a new customer orders from you, they change the phone number. So you have, after 24 hours, you have no way to contact that customer. So they're controlling all that data.
And then also, just I have found myself in waiting to pick up an order that I have phoned in from the restaurant myself. You could find yourself waiting with maybe 10 or more third-party delivery app drivers, and that could create a crowding issue as well.
As far as third-party app delivery drivers, the restaurant's really kind of handcuffed to what the third-party app does. So it's not, in many cases, the deliveries might show up late, the driver isn't professional, there's a lot of different things. Like at our restaurant, we use our own drivers, we don't use the third-party drivers for that reason. And one of the things it does is it loses your brand loyalty. People don't realize it's your restaurant, because everything's being handled through their apps, and that's not good for the restaurant. We definitely want to repeat business, and if it looks like it's coming, we're the ones who are going to take the grunt of the mistakes that the third party apps like Grubhub and Uber Eats and DoorDash do.
It seems like if somebody discovers you through a third party delivery app and they like you, it seems like your advice is just write down our name, write down our phone number, and just call us directly next time.
Absolutely. The one good thing about the third party apps is it's a platform for people to find and experience new restaurants. Once you find those restaurants that you like, the best thing you can do for them is to order directly off their own platform. Almost every restaurant now has an online ordering site or a phone number you can just call to order at the restaurant. That's the best thing you can do to help out those restaurants. The fees that they're charging us are incredible. If I could save the $100,000 a year that I paid third party apps, I would give that back to my employees with higher wages and be able to, offer more benefits and things like that. Their fees are absolutely killing us.
Brian Tondrick, founder and owner of Bartoli's Pizzeria in Chicago's Roscoe Village and Westtown neighborhoods. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, ways to learn if you're on track with your retirement savings.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A person is wounded in a shooting outside of a terminal at O'Hare early this morning. The latest round of government cuts targets the U.S. Department of Education. It's Personal Finance Wednesday, tracking the progress of your retirement plan. A major pharmacy chain is taking a less-is-more approach when it comes to the size of its stores. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 84 points. The NASDAQ is up 284. The S&P 500 is up 51. We have 47 degrees right now at O'Hare under mostly sunny skies. It's 12:31. Topping our news of the half hour. An argument at O'Hare early today escalated into a shooting that left a man wounded. It happened a little before 1 o'clock this morning in an area outside the airport's Terminal 2. The 25-year-old victim was hit in the lower body by two bullets and taken to a hospital where he's listed in stable condition. Police are questioning a potential suspect. There's no word yet on what sparked the violence. The U.S. Department of Education is slashing more than 1,300 jobs.
Nearly half of the workforce is getting cut.
We wanted to make sure that we kept all of the right people and the good people to make sure that the outward-facing programs, the grants, the appropriations that come from Congress, all of that are being met. And none of that's going to fall through the cracks.
That's Education Secretary Linda McMahon on Fox.
A great nation invests in the education of its citizenry.
Ray Hart is the executive director of the Council of the Great City Schools.
I think it speaks volumes that we're interested in disinvesting in our students.
Stacy Lynn, CBS News, Washington.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher today and gaining some altitude. We're joined by Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist with CFRA Research in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Sam, thank you for joining us today. And coming off of two straight days of steep losses and with the markets approaching correction territory at times and some people saying that the Dow is already in bear market territory, how does that change investment strategy?
Hello, Rob. Good to talk to you again. Well, basically, the strategy should remain the same based on what an investor's time horizon and goal happens to be. Really, for emotional investors, the strategy should be to sit on their hands and to do nothing because nobody knows for sure how far the market will decline. But what I do know from teaching courses on stock market history is that declines of anywhere from 10 to 20% have taken an average of only 4 months to get back to break even.
And what is driving the market today? I mean, obviously, the tariff volatility is still there. Is this just simply a case of just watching 2 days of declines and jumping in and saying there are some bargains to be had today?
I think a lot of that could be explained with what you just said, because we had Wednesday and Thursday of last week in negative territory with a Friday interruption. Then we had Monday and Tuesday of this week in the red. And so technicians would say that the market got oversold and as a result is likely experiencing a near-term bounce, a counter trend rally. But I think we have to wait and see what additional news on the tariff front could either propel the market further or cause it to turn around again.
And then one thing I forgot to mention in the last question, and that is we did have a rather encouraging consumer price index print today. Of course, this is not the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, but it did come in below analyst expectations. It came in inside of the 2% window, but still above the 2% target. So is this another case of maybe traders or the trading algorithms electing to accentuate the positive today?
I think that yes, with today's inflation report, it allowed investors to feel that maybe we're not headed for stagflation, stagnant economic growth with inflation, because if inflation is indeed coming down and likely to meet the Fed's target sometime in 2026, now the real question is, what about the growth aspect? So the recession possibility remains on the table the longer that this trade disruption takes place.
Now, you are not the only person to come on this program and say that maybe the market was a little overvalued coming into 2025. It was a belief shared by many people, and they said it wouldn't take an awful lot to trigger a sell-off, and it seems like the trade uncertainty is that something.
You're right. The S&P 500 at the beginning of the year was trading at more a greater than 25% premium to its average valuation over the past 10 years and about a 35% premium over the last 20 years. So while price to earnings ratios, if they're elevated, don't traditionally start a bear market or at least a correction, something else could do it and the market would therefore be vulnerable.
And then lastly, I mean, obviously the last couple of days have been pretty tough to swallow in terms of just on a percentage basis, the degree of the sell-off. You're talking about 2% days, a 1% day. But over that time horizon that we talked about before, the Dow and the S&P 500 are more or less back to where they were last fall. So even though those red numbers can be pretty intimidating, putting it into perspective, it's you're still ahead of where you were a year ago.
Absolutely. And actually, 5,400 on the S&P 500, which would represent a peak-to-trough decline of about 12%, is where we were in September of 2024 during the last digestion of gains. So really, it's more like we're just retreating to where we were 6 months ago, certainly not where we were 12 months ago.
Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist, CFRA Research in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, benchmarks to note as you move toward retirement.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. A quality plan for retirement can be tracked through some milestones along the way. Let's get some insight from Ed Jurtzen, Certified Financial Planner and founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago, the website, theengagewealthgroup.com. Ed, thank you for joining us today. And more often than not, Ed, when we talk about retirement savings, we talk about people who are just starting out. They have their first big boy or big girl job coming out of college, and we talk about why they should start saving for retirement the moment they get that new job. Don't spend the money on a night out. Take it out of your paycheck. Or we talk about people who are close to retirement. But now we have a segment, Ed, that speaks to me and people like me, people in our mid-40s. We've been saving now for over 20 years, but we're 20 years away from retirement. And I think this is a good time to talk about how we're doing at the midpoint.
Yeah, Rob, this is a great topic because this provides, like you said, this is kind of a waypoint for most people. Are you on track or not on track? And this is one of the first questions we get from individuals in regards to retirement readiness. Like, what is my number? Like, what are we aiming for? And it's an important element in today's discussions. And what your listeners really have to remember, it's a balance between savings and expected spending. So it's a balance of both. So you can amass a whole bunch of savings, but if your spending is out of control, you're going to wipe that out in retirement pretty quickly. So your listeners have got to remember, it's a balance between both of those elements.
Now, when we talk about some of the benchmarks for retirement savings when you're in your 40s, should you look at it from the perspective of my own personal retirement savings that I have been amassing over the last 20 years or so? Or if you're married, should you look at it through the lens of these are our household retirement savings?
Yeah, so we always like to look at the formation of a household as togetherness, right? So whether you're contributing to a plan or a spouse is contributing to a plan, this is your retirement plan. So absolutely, it's the household assets. And not only the household assets, Rob, in terms of savings, but also the household debt. And how are you handling the debt today and in the future? So yes, it's that comprehensive view. But more importantly, the bridge is don't look across the street or across the fence and gauge what other people are doing. This is your personal financial journey. So figure out if this is your own path, not what others are accumulating or doing as well.
And when you talk about assessing your household debt as a terms of, you know, liabilities, when calculating your net worth, everyone has a mortgage. Most people have a mortgage. But I mean, what is the debt that really sets off a lot of alarm bells for you? Is it just having a lot of credit card debt?
It's perfect, Rob. So we often guide clients. The goal is to prioritize a reduction in what I'll call consumer-based debt, credit cards, car loans, home equity lines that were used for vacations. That's what you want to have zero or as close to zero as possible because that provides you flexibility in retirement. If you don't owe a bunch of people, you can have much more flexible retirement. Having a mortgage or things of that nature in retirement is okay, but we would like to pay that down over time if that's a high relative rate. So yes, it's a focus of this multi-disciplined approach, saving, spending, and debt.
Now, I think a lot of people who are listening to segments like this try to take stock of their own saving situation, and maybe your concern is whatever it is, whatever you're doing, you're not doing enough of it. But I would imagine over the course of your career, you have encountered quite a few people of means who don't do any of it.
And that's a great question, because basically what people need is a guide path or a plan. And that's where these rules of thumb come in place. They're just there to kind of give you a guidance in terms of where you're at. But again, seeking out the services of a certified financial planner to provide this plan for you to gauge whether you're on track is a good option, right? So you're going to figure out if you're on track or not and then develop strategies. So again, folks who have amassed a lot of money but are also spending at a high clip will not make it well into financial retirement because of the fact that they have so much draining of their resources. So when you take into effect, you know, Social Security, when do you claim, if you've got pensions out there, all of these different financial puzzle pieces are on the table, and having someone help and guide you through it is important. So ultimately, again, the goal is to try to get to a point in your life where you have choices of financial independence. Do I work or not work? And then what does that mean now for the next 15 or even 20 years? And that planning goes a long way, not only today, but well into the future.
And it's a good time in your 40s to take that assessment, because theoretically, these are our prime earning years. I mean, if you're in your 40s, you're really, raking it in until you're in your 60s. So it's a good time to get in that solid retirement footing.
And that's good guidance, Rob, but don't be discouraged, right? Because the income pie is only so big and expenses tend to grow, especially, let's call it, parents who've got kids going to school, let's say this fall, right? There's going to be some potential expenses, and realize you may take a step back or two, but there's financial incentives to help you save later on in life. So in your past age of 50, you can always save more. So if you find yourself a little bit behind, don't be discouraged. Don't be discouraged. Give yourself the ability to catch up. And it may mean cutting back in different areas, but ultimately this is what you're trying to do in terms of that big goal. One last thing I'll add, Rob, is be balanced. Don't just be that squirrel putting the nuts, if you would, in that savings tree and not live life. It's all about balance, but pay particular attention to your spending. And that's a great way to start in terms of figuring out how much money can be for savings and long-term retirement and how much for the bills.
Ed Jurtzen, Certified Financial Planner at the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Pharmacy chain CVS is trying a new strategy as it opens new locations. Let's learn more from Tina Reed, healthcare editor with Axios in Washington. Tina, thank you for joining us today. And this seems to be part of a pattern that's taking place not only at CVS, but also at the newly private Walgreens as well. And that is smaller stores, less of an emphasis on front of the house, convenience store kind of stuff, and a greater emphasis on premium prescription drugs.
Well, what's been interesting is that for so long we've been seeing some of these different national retailers really look to expand on their healthcare services. We saw them buying, we saw them building. And in this case, as we've sort of seen this retrenchment, CVS is saying we're going to test out a small number of stores where they're going to be much smaller, 5,000 square feet. Which is about a half to a third of the size of their current average location. And they're going to feature a full-service pharmacy and some limited over-the-counter products, but not really that front-of-store retail experience that I think people are used to.
Well, right. You don't need to these kind of one-stop shop type of pharmacies where you can pick up your prescription drugs and also get a handle of vodka. That's probably a business model whose time has come and gone. But as they retrench, though, how is CVS also addressing the prescription drugs by mail model?
So they've actually, a number of these different retailers, again, have really invested heavily in apps and digital prescription services. CVS is obviously among them, where they're trying to really compete with some of these online retailers, including Amazon. They've also built what they call a care pass, which is a subscription model that offers free delivery. While we see, for instance, like Walgreens partnered with FedEx to try and get some of their drop-offs and package shipping. So they're really trying to expand the revenue streams.
And then CVS, like Walgreens, probably found itself in a place where it had too many stores, too much square feet to address the needs in the marketplace today. We all know the issue with Walgreens was they probably expanded way too quickly. Was that the same problem at CVS?
So, yes, we saw this overexpansion, and so now we're seeing a lot of these chains are closing locations. They opened too many stores in close proximity to each other, and they essentially, as they were seeing declining revenue from a lot of those front-of-store sales, they weren't making up for it in their back-of-house sales. And so they're really trying to find the right combination of services and products that they can sell and actually make a profit.
Tina Reed, healthcare editor, Axios in Washington. Thank you for joining us today.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.